The material on this cassette was originally recorded for the national radio series Focus on the Family, featuring psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. This cassette features a discussion between Dr. Dobson and his guest, Charlie Wiedemeyer, his wife Lucy, and Charlie's nurse, Linda Peavyhouse. Together, they discuss Charlie's experience with Lou Gehrig's disease and how Charlie, though he can't speak on his own, talks through his wife and his nurse as they read his lips. This type of communication has allowed them to speak to large audiences and has enabled Charlie to continue to coach high school football. The program begins with a further introduction from Dr. Dobson as he addresses Focus on the Family co-host Mike Trout.
Michael, there are times here at Focus on the Family when we meet two or three guests for the radio program, and there is an instant bond of fellowship and friendship. And I'm telling you, I feel that for the people that are here. We met only a few minutes ago. I've heard of them for years, but this is the first chance we've had to get acquainted. And I love them already. And I know that our listeners are going to feel that way about it, too. Our guests are Charlie and Lucy Wiedemeyer. That name may be familiar to our listeners because Charlie was the central figure or the subject of a movie, I guess, Lucy, in 1985? Is that correct?
Of a documentary.
Documentary,
yes.
In 85. There's been a movie and a documentary.
Exactly.
The movie was titled what?
The movie was titled Quiet Victory, the Charlie Wiedemeyer Story.
And the documentary was?
Was One More Season.
And One More Season was on CBS?
One More Season was on public broadcasting. And Quiet Victory, the Hollywood version, was on CBS right after Christmas.
Ah. Well, the essence of that story is that Charlie Wiedemeyer, who sits here in front of me in a wheelchair, was an all-star athlete in Hawaii, was named the high school prep player of the decade, went on to Michigan State University. I'm trying not to hold that against him, being a USC fan. And did very well there, obviously. Came out and accepted the position as coach, head football coach in 1972, Charlie, is that correct?
Actually, he was an assistant for 4 years and then was head coach.
I see.
In 77.
Our listeners may have just picked up the first clue that Charlie is going to talk through those who are speaking for him, who are reading his lips. Then in 1977, he became head coach. And then several years later, Lucy, pick up the story and tell us what happened.
Actually, the year he became head coach, he began to have problems with his fingers. He figured it was arthritis or football injuries. He was having trouble writing on the chalkboard. He was a math teacher, and it just wasn't working right. His fingers, he felt there was weakness in them. He was having trouble buttoning his shirts. And so for months, he just presumed it was old football injuries. However, in the spring of 1978, he was hit with the news that he had a terminal illness, Lou Gehrig's disease, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Charlie, what was that diagnosis like for you? You came out of the doctor's office having heard the news. How did it hit you?
When I was in the doctor's office, I really was not affected by it because I felt fine and looked fine, so there wasn't any reason to worry. Nothing physical was a problem.
Mm-hmm. The disease came on very slowly, didn't it?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. However, as I drove home and thought about the end result, I began to think more about the possibility of having to leave my family. And at that time, it was very frightening to me.
How long did the doctor tell you you would live?
The doctor told me between 1 and 3 years.
Hmm.
And praise God, it's been 12 years.
And going strong.
Yeah.
Also with us, I failed to introduce, is Linda Peavyhouse, who's a nurse. Linda, you travel with Charlie and Lucy wherever they go?
Oh, yes.
And Charlie requires 24-hour day care?
Yes.
What does that consist of?
Everything. Charlie has to have everything done for him. He's not able to use any part of his body himself, so we have to do not only the routine daily needs, him and washing his hair and brushing his teeth, but getting him in and out of bed, making him comfortable, He's on a ventilator. He isn't able to breathe at all on his own, so we have to monitor the ventilator and suction his trach and just do all of that.
Now, ALS syndrome, or Lou Gehrig's disease, is a neuromuscular disorder. Describe it in a little better detail.
Well, we usually describe it kind of in lay terms so people can understand that the nerves in your brain that go through your spinal column to your voluntary muscles that tell your muscles to move, those nerves kind of deteriorate so that your muscles atrophy and just basically shrivel up and quit working. So eventually you're not able to move any of your voluntary muscles.
It's essentially from the neck down. It does not affect the brain or the mind.
Right.
It leaves the mind kind of a captive in a body that no longer serves it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He has all sensation. He can feel everything, but he just isn't able to move. So he's
Lucy
like,
just pinched his cheek.
Just testing.
I want to tell you something. This man has the wit of a razor, too. So we'll probably see it before we're through here. Charlie, are you acquainted or have you heard of Dr. Stephen Hawking?
Yes, we have. In fact, we have met him personally twice.
Have you really?
Yes, and spent a lot of time with him and his nurses. He is such a brilliant man. Although, I was rather disappointed that he does not believe in God.
No, he doesn't.
The fun part, though, is that Charlie had Linda commandeer his nurse, and we discovered that she is a very strong Christian. And she is working on him. So that's a delight.
That's only one place where your witness is reaching at this time. I've followed the career of Dr. Stephen Hawking for 15 or 20 years. It's a fascinating story. He says that before he became ill, he was bored with life. He drank too much. He smoked too much. He wasn't interested in his work. And then when he learned that he had ALS, and they told him also that he had a very short period of time to live, that everything became meaningful to him just suddenly. Because he said when the expectations for life are reduced to zero, then everything has significance. Getting up in the morning, being alive, seeing a tree, just having the opportunity to experience the love of your family.
Charlie says so often we take things for granted and we don't appreciate what we have in life until we lose it. Because I must tell you that he gave Stephen Hawking a bad time about not having a British accent on his computer.
We should explain that Dr. Stephen Hawking is thought by many to be the brightest man on the face of the earth, that he has inherited Einstein's mantle. He did much of the mathematical work, the computations that led to the theory, at least, of the black holes. He's just written a book that Mike and I have been reading called A Brief History of Time. The only trouble with it, Charlie, as you say, is that it doesn't leave much room for God. But he is a fascinating man anyway, and he has walked the same path that you are walking. Did you have an opportunity to share your faith with him when you saw him?
We attempted to, but he was not very receptive.
Yeah.
So we communicate with his nurse. We have letters back and forth, and she's constantly reminding him about and talking to him about Charlie.
The primary message here today is the incredible inspiration, Charlie, that you are to so many people. Despite the fact that you're confined to the wheelchair, you can't breathe on your own, you're fed through a tube, and you're obviously unable to walk or even move, you are still a football coach. What level of coaching are you in now?
I'm on the far soft level, but also consult with the varsity. And the interesting thing is, too, he has coaches from everywhere always trying to call and ask him questions. In fact, when we were on the movie set in South Carolina, he talked to five different football teams, and the coaches were forever wanting to know his offensive mind.
You all speak all over the country, don't you? You spoke yesterday and today as well, I think. Explain how that's done. The two of you Linda and Lucy read Charlie's lips?
We have a three-ring circus, is what we do. Yes, and we have a sort of a prepared speech, Charlie's testimony, that I very graciously allow Linda to give so he doesn't get mad at his dear wife in case someone goofs. And we explain a little bit about what Charlie's been through and talk about ALS. And once Linda gives a testimony, then we open it up for questions from the audience, and it's phenomenal, the questions we get. The only problem we've been having is that someone keeps interjecting more and more by the name of Charlie and keeps adding to it, and it's just, it's delightful to see the response from people. We speak to groups from kindergarten age all the way through retirement.
Charlie said we'd like to primarily share the difference that God has made in our lives. Charlie's been a Christian 4 years, and the Lord has really, really made a difference.
Charlie, that's a very important part of your story. How did you become a Christian? It obviously happened after the onset of your disease.
Right. In January, Charlie's son, Cully, had become a Christian before Charlie did, actually, because his nephew, Blaine Geisen, who had played for the Atlanta Falcons, who was a strong Christian, would travel through San Jose and stop and visit them. And through his influence, Charlie's son had become a Christian. And so Cully had gradually been planting seeds, talking to his dad about the Lord. But Charlie was pretty stubborn and, you know, just didn't feel like he needed that. He had been a very religious person all of his life, had always gone to church, and I think more. Oh, he says he thinks more ignorant than stubborn. But on this particular day, Charlie was very, very weak. He weighed probably 95 pounds. He had not eaten for 3 or 4 days. The muscles of his throat had just atrophied to the point that he couldn't swallow. He was having a lot of difficulty breathing because the muscles of his lungs and chest weren't working. And the nurse taking care of him this day had tried all day to get just a couple of ounces of juice down him with no success. So in the afternoon when the relief nurse came in, she was a new nurse, walked in the door and saw how desperate his situation was. It was like Charlie was not sure how many more minutes or hours he could just hold on and keep living. So she walked in the room and asked if she could pray. Well, Charlie told her yes, she could. So she put her hands on Charlie's chest and just started to pray that somehow God would help him to breathe, help him to be able to eat, just make him stronger. When they were praying, Charlie said a presence came into the room that he had never, ever experienced before. The other nurse who was there was not a Christian, and then this gal and Charlie all sensed it. All of them just started to cry because they didn't know what else to do. And when they finished praying, they looked down at the foot of Charlie's bed, and he had been given an amaryllis plant several weeks before, and the plant was not doing well. The plant was just kind of wilted and droopy, and they were going to throw it out, but just hadn't gotten around to it. But on the top of this plant were 3 buds that were tightly closed. And Charlie said that when they finished praying and looked at the foot of the bed, all 3 buds of that plant were wide open.
Yes.
And it was just like God was saying, I've done a miracle in this plant. I'm going to do a miracle in your life. And Charlie said to the nurse, I think I can swallow. Please, you know, go get some soup. And with a matter of minutes, Charlie swallowed 2 whole bowls of soup.
No. 2.5.
2.5 bowls of soup.
Get it straight.
Get it straight. He says it's a long walk home. Tell it right? Okay. And so they were so excited, they called Lucy at work and told her to hurry home. Well, she didn't know why she was hurrying home, and she drove home as fast as she could. So they explained about the prayer and the presence in the room and the flower and him swallowing the soup. And then she explained about becoming a Christian, how that they could confess their sins and open up their hearts and let the Lord come in and make them new creatures, and that the Lord could take over what they could no longer do themselves in their lives. So all the seeds that Cully had planted kind of culminated in that one evening. And together, Charlie and Lucy prayed. And
you were not
a
Christian either at that moment.
I did not know that you had to have a personal relationship with the Lord. I thought I was a Christian. I've been raised.
Or that we could, Charlie.
Yes,
said.
That we could. Yeah, that was so exciting.
And so together they prayed and became Christians.
Charlie, does it frighten you a little bit today that you could have died before the Lord came into your life?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Because that
Absolutely.
Is your passion today, isn't it?
That's right.
The exciting thing, too, Dr. Dobson, was that Charlie had been very afraid to die. In fact, night after night after night, he would not sleep. And maybe he dripped off a little bit in the morning. He was afraid he'd choke to death. But once he found the Lord, that worry was totally removed. And that has been a big excitement.
That was the question that was going through my mind. Was there ever a time, as the disease progressed, that you just wanted to give up, that you thought you'd go ahead and die?
I remember seeing the physical and emotional strain on our family. But after I told Charlie that I would rather have him like this than not at all, then it gave me more encouragement to live.
Let's go back to that championship football game several years ago. That was the subject of the documentary, or at least was included in it. You were still head football coach. You came down to your last game, Charlie, the last game that you coached as head football coach. And you were in a championship game against St. Francis, I believe I read.
Yes, that's correct.
All right. Tell us what happened.
Just the fact that I was able to be on the field was a miracle. And knowing that I could be on the field at that time was such a blessing.
You had to call the plays, didn't you?
Yes.
I mean, you read his lips and then you translated the plays.
But the interesting thing was that the documentary touches on was the year prior. Charlie had a championship football team that was expected to take everything and win the championship.
And it was St. Francis that beat
you. And it was exactly what happened. They went into overtime. They were tied. And because of some poor calls, the game was lost. And Charlie never thought he'd see another football game. Never. So it was interesting. Then he went through almost dying, being on the respirator, and the team had been, expected to maybe place third in the league and not go on to any championship game. So it was doubly exciting to see these young boys, who no one had really given much credit, to continue and go all the way through to the championship game. And again, it was just the fact that he was allowed to be a part of that game. You know, once you really find the Lord, you realize that winning really isn't where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a part of something and enjoying it to its fullest is the ultimate.
Lucy, give us a word picture of what that scene was like now. Charlie was on the sidelines in a wheelchair.
Yes, Charlie was in the golf cart, and I was next to him calling the plays. And as I drove that golf cart down into the stadium, when we went down a long ramp, it was misty. You knew God was there. The grass was so green. I mean, it was just like we were in a dream, you know, appreciating every moment that we were there. The stadium was jammed with people. Everybody was cheering and going crazy. That part was exciting. And in the beginning of the game, we took charge and did very well. However, by the third quarter, we hadn't scored again. We scored twice, and it was, the score was 14 to 12 at that time.
It came right down to the last play.
It came down to 40 seconds in the game, where the team had a 28-yard field goal, the other team, St. Francis, to kick, which they had accomplished through every game and had won almost every game with a field goal. And it was just so disheartening because we thought, here we go again. It's a replay of the year before. But, you know, when you say those silent prayers, And it's not, Lord, let's win. It's, Lord, your will be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. With those 40 seconds, the ball was bobbled. I'm getting goosebumps telling you. It was blocked and pandemonium set forth. I mean, that stadium went crazy. The cheerleaders, the stands were yelling, do it for Charlie. They were yelling, we love you, Charlie. I mean, there was so much compassion. I mean, it was almost embarrassing because, you know, it wasn't for Charlie. I mean, just
but it was
there,
for Charlie.
But
it was almost
people,
a love gift to him from the Lord.
It really was. I remember how excited it was when I was at Michigan State in 1966, and we tied Notre Dame for the national championship. And this victory at Los Gatos was equally as exciting.
You had a few moments where you read his lips wrong, Lucy, and called the wrong play. Is that correct?
She says she read her lips wrong. His lips wrong.
I know what he's going to say next. Yes.
Say
in fact, oh, yes, Charlie's been known to fire me before. In fact, in one game, it was three times. But I had to rehire her because she was the only one who could read his lips. It's nice to be indispensable. Yeah.
I love your sense of humor, Charlie. I read that one of your nurses made a mistake and accidentally spilled some liquid down your trach tube, and you nearly drowned. And when you recovered from it, you asked her to wear a wetsuit the next time she came in. In fact, that year, 1985, was a very difficult year. That was the year we almost lost you. Explain what happened.
This was when Charlie was chosen to coach the All-Star game for the county, and we had been to football practice that afternoon, and there had been a series of brush fires in Los Gatos, and the smoke was real heavy in the air. Charlie had a difficult time breathing at best, and we just were barely able to make it home from football practice. He was just struggling and fighting for every breath, and just about the time we got him eased down into bed, he quit breathing completely. His heart was still beating, but he was totally unconscious because he wasn't breathing at all. And there was no choice but to do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And, yes, I wish I could remember that. But we were able to... Oh, he says he wishes he could remember the mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
Oh, what it means.
And I was able to get him to breathe on his own, barely enough to be conscious. But 2 days later, the same thing happened. He quit breathing, and it didn't work. I would give him a breath. He would take a little bit of a breath. I would give him one. Not enough to even become conscious, and that was when we had to rush him to the hospital. And Charlie would like me to share the story of what happened when we got there. They explained that they were going to rush him to surgery and do a tracheotomy, hoping that cutting a hole in his throat and putting a tube in would help him to breathe, but that he would be awake for the surgery. And so, since communication was so difficult, Charlie could still talk at this point, but no one could understand him unless they were with him often. And so he had convinced the doctor to allow me to go into the operating room with him. So they put him on a gurney. When we got to the operating room doors, they opened the door, pulled his gurney in, and slammed the door. Of course, the doctor who said I could go wasn't in the vicinity, and normally lay people or visitors aren't allowed to go in. And Charlie says that that was the scariest time of his entire life. Several things made it real difficult. One of the first things they did was pull Charlie's arm over to do an IV. Well, Charlie's shoulders are totally out of the sockets due to the course of his disease, and his arms don't move to the side, and it was very, very painful for him when they pulled his arm over.
And he couldn't tell him.
He kept asking them, please move my arm in, and of course they didn't understand him. But the scariest part was from the emergency room to the OR, all this phlegm had accumulated in his throat that we had been periodically suctioning. And he kept asking him, you know, please suction my throat. And they not only didn't understand, but they quit trying to understand. And they just said...
Linda, they would not allow you in there to interpret.
They wouldn't let me in there to interpret. And they just kept saying, relax, Charlie, relax. It'll be over in a few minutes. He said, I thought it was going to be over before they ever even started the surgery. And that was so scary. And he says that he's so thankful he had become a Christian before that. He said he never could have made it through that horrible experience if he wasn't. And the scripture verse that he kept saying over and over through that whole surgery was Isaiah 41:10. Fear not, for I am with you. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will keep you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And he feels like he could never have made it through if he hadn't known God was right there with him, giving him the strength to go through that.
Lucy, what were you doing during this terrible crisis? Were you
there? Well, I was right there, and the most wonderful thing was the fact that Linda was praying in Charlie's ear the entire time. Normally, they don't let you ride in the back of the ambulance, but they allowed Linda to because she knew more than the paramedics did, and she was keeping him going, literally praying the entire ride. Once we got into the hospital, she continued that. She continued right up to having the surgery. In fact, while he was there, after the surgery, recuperating, she would write scriptures on index cards and have him memorize them and tuck them in between his toes so he could read them and memorize them. And since he has these big Hawaiian feet that we call luau feet, she could get a lot of cards in them.
Charlie, we're almost to the end of this program, and I want to just continue our conversation, and we will air the recording of that tomorrow because there's some other things I want to ask you. You have this last moment to say anything you want to people who are hurting. Here at Focus on the Family, we're getting mail from people who are in such great pain. Some are going through the kind of thing you are. Some have the same disease. I've heard from many people with ALS syndrome. Others are dying of cancer. Others have lost children. There is a word of encouragement there. You shared it with me in my office. What would you like to say?
First of all, Charlie would like to say that to any people who are handicapped or have disabilities, that there is hope and there is encouragement, and each one of you have a choice. You can choose to just allow yourself to be discouraged, to complain about the situation that you're in and not have joy in your life, or you can choose to live life to its fullest, to make the best of what you do have, and that they should try to treat their difficulties as challenges rather than barriers and attempt to turn their disadvantages into advantages and disabilities into abilities. And that if they're discouraged or depressed, or if for any reason their life isn't going the way they want it to, that they can overcome their difficulties by allowing God to control their lives and by facing their difficulties with a never-say-die attitude. So often, we allow negative thoughts to enter our minds. And then those thoughts are counterproductive in our lives, but if we allow positive thoughts in and determine that we're going to live life to its fullest, then God can come in and fill our hearts and our minds with His thoughts. And then God can help us to keep living and not give up until we're done living.
Lucy, I have a quote in front of me that came from you. I don't know when you said this, but a member of our staff said that you said, "It's okay if our lives are over at any time because we've had so much." Did you really say that?
I did.
Do you mean that?
I do. I do. In fact, we often talk about Charlie's first words once he gets to heaven. He's going to ask God, "Where's the food?"
You're going to have a steak dinner, Charlie, right?
Yes, we feel we've been so blessed. I mean, we see so much unhappiness around us in perfectly healthy people, families with divorces, with problems with their children. We feel blessed every day.
You love this man?
I love this man a lot.
Lucy, I'm anxious to get your reaction to all that's happened to you all. We heard a little bit of it. First of all, how did you react to the diagnosis itself? How did you cope with what you saw coming? Did you go to the library and read up on ALS syndrome? And did you find out just what was ahead for you all? What's been your journey?
Well, it's been very interesting. It's been our journey together. And initially, Charlie and I were watching a movie called The Lou Gehrig Story. And as we watched, as the actor picked up a bottle of ketchup and let it slide through his fingers, as he picked up a fork and lost it, these are exact things that Charlie had done, and we knew that was what he had. However, when I went to the library to look up the illness, there was no mention of it being terminal. And when Charlie came home with the news from the doctor that he said, "I'll live 1 year at the max, 3, I was appalled. And I think you go through a numb time where it's total disbelief. Mm-hmm. And again, Charlie looked fine. He could walk and talk. And so I think we chose to really ignore the initial diagnosis.
And it came on very slowly.
It was very slow. And so we coped with it very slowly. I remember initially thinking, "Oh dear, what's going to happen when he can't do all these things?" And then I realized that I wasn't going to worry about that, that we were going to live for today. And the important thing we found was that we really needed to share our feelings with each other. And many times we'd cry in bed, and we thought, gee, God must really need a coach up there. And, you know, our sense of humor, Charlie's sense of humor, really has played a major role in in coping. Of course, we know God has a sense of humor. But in fact, one evening, I almost ran over him.
That's real funny. Yeah. You want to explain that?
I'll laugh about that.
Yes. Well, I was having to drive him to school, and that was a tough thing for Charlie to allow me to do because he was losing his independence. So I put him in the car, and the car didn't start. We had a little Honda, and so I had to get him out of the car. I walked him around to the other car, and as I was starting the other car, my car, the Honda began to slowly come backwards down the driveway. And Charlie had trouble balancing, so his initial reaction was, I'm going to stop that car, which he had no capability of doing. He couldn't use his hands at all. But he turned toward it, and as he did, it knocked him down, and the wheel was within inches of his head as I ran around my car to stop the car, and it touched his head. That's why he doesn't have so much hair on his head, he likes to tell people. But and of course the children came running out of the house as they heard me screaming. We got him up, you know, we were all, our hearts were all beating so hard, and he turned to me and he said, what were you trying to do, run me over? I said, okay, now what do I say? And luckily, that humor came through, and I said, Charlie, if I was trying to run you over, I would have used a bigger car. And it really, humor has helped us immeasurably. In fact, recently, I should tell you the story. We were in a restaurant, but I should also backtrack. Charlie, initially, when he began to lose his strength in his hands and could no longer feed himself, he was reluctant to go to restaurants, reluctant to be seen in public where I had to feed him. However, these days, now, since he's found the Lord, he is not afraid of anything. And he loves to go to restaurants, even though he cannot eat. So one evening we were there with a group of friends. The waitress brought him this giant milkshake and put it right in front of him. And I said to her, oh, no, that must belong to one of the children. And I looked at the other end of the table, and they all had their milkshakes. And I looked back at Charlie, and he was sitting there with this giant grin on his face. And I said to the waitress, my goodness, who ordered that milkshake? And she said, well, I asked him if he wanted one, and he gave me the eyebrows, so I brought him a milkshake. So I have to keep close tabs on him.
Are you flirting, Charlie, with the waitress?
Oh, Charlie's saying the Lord must have such a great sense of humor to send me on a speaking tour when I can't even speak.
How often do you speak per year, Charlie?
Well, he's only been doing this for about a year, and we do two or three times a week, usually. Most of them have been local, where we go for a day or whatever, sometimes on a weekend. But this has been fun this week, spending a week down here in Southern California, speaking several different places.
And the Lord is really blessing that effort, isn't he?
Incredibly, yes. Charlie said, if someone had told me a year ago that I would be doing this sort of thing, I would have thought they were insane. Charlie was very shy and very timid in high school. In fact, he says it was difficult to even speak in front of a class. He had only spoken in front of his football players. So this is pretty amazing.
You know, we have said maybe glibly through the years that the Lord can turn tragedy into triumph. It's very possible that you will touch more lives and influence far more people through your illness, Charlie, than you ever did through your whole body and through your strength and through your athletic ability.
I would like to say something. Many people come up to Charlie and say, Charlie, don't you ask the Lord for healing? And Charlie, for years, he did. He wanted God to heal him. However, now, instead of asking God to heal him, he just asked God to use him.
Oh, my. Michael, there's a message for all of us.
There's strength there.
Lucy, I want to come back to your devotion and commitment to Charlie. I have read that wives or even husbands in this kind of situation typically abandon their mates. 80% take off, leave in the moment of crisis. Have you read that also? Is that your understanding?
And we know a lot of those stories. We know a lot of families that have been broken apart and really devastated.
What's the source of your commitment?
There is no question there. The Lord's strength really has done that. When you get to a point where you just don't think you can go on, he's there for you. He's there for you every time. And for many spouses that leave, it's because they're afraid. You know, they just can't watch someone they love fall apart in front of their eyes. And that's where God has given me the strength. And the fun part is, before it was like, you know, each day was a gift. Each day could have been his last. And now I think we know that Charlie's going to outlive all of us. Without a question.
In those moments when you've been afraid, when the future looks so dark, were you able to share that with Charlie?
I think that's what's really helped both of us, that we feel it's been our disease, and together we have done things. And Charlie has been so good to have me down on the football field with him. Our children have helped. When I had to be at work, either one of the children would drive Charlie in the golf cart. We've had tremendous support from his football players, from the community at large. And it's basically because Charlie has allowed it.
Yeah.
A lot of people are too proud to allow help. And we've discovered, especially as being Christians, that support is phenomenal.
Hmm. Charlie, how have you supported Lucy? That runs two ways. I mean, you're the one that's gone through this terrible illness, and yet have you attempted to give to her and support her as well?
I have always been supportive, and I think because of her personality and character, that a very special person. Ooh, I like that.
I asked in the last program, Lucy, if you love Charlie. Does that run both ways?
Absolutely.
Well, you've been married 23 years?
We've been very blessed, almost 23 come June. We went to high school together and to college together. And, you know, there are very few of our friends that have stayed together over those years that can date way back there. So we feel blessed that we've been able to enjoy all those years.
And Charlie was an incredible football star at that time. Were you a cheerleader?
Yes.
Was this kind of the
kind of a storybook
the ideal
thing.
Romance here?
You bet.
Fell in love and got married?
Yes, of course.
Did you go to Michigan State with him?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Followed him to that cold country.
Lucy, that, if anything, might have made this situation more difficult for you, having seen this man as a tower of strength, you know, as a model. He was the high school prep player of the decade in Hawaii.
Well, it's been something. I think that we talked about this at great length when Charlie was first diagnosed. I can remember one time in particular we took off and spent the weekend away from home and just sat up all night talking. And we both came to the conclusion that we have been very blessed growing up in a beautiful place like Hawaii and, you know, having all our family around. And it's something that we choose to dwell on the positive. And not the negative. And I feel blessed that I was able to be at those games and watch him perform and be a part of that. And I think that's a treasure, you know, knowing that, because it's helped me, knowing what he'd been through all those years, to cope now. And the interesting thing is, he used to be shy.
That doesn't seem to be a problem now. Linda, you are more than a nurse in this situation. I mean, I can see it in your eyes. You care about these folks, don't you?
Sure do.
Where does that dedication come from?
Well, I've been a Christian since I was 11, and I think a lot of... Oh, Charlie says a long time ago. Are you nice? I consider it...
Zicker everywhere.
Charlie can't say a word. Yeah. It gets more zingers in.
In fact, I didn't read what he said a minute ago, and I'll think about whether I will or not. I look at it as a ministry to me. My husband and I had originally intended to go to the mission field, and because of various circumstances, that didn't work out, and it was always a real disappointment to me. And it was always like there was this little empty spot in my heart, you know, that I didn't fulfill what I had originally intended to do, and I just feel like doing this and sharing my life with them just kind of fills that spot. And so I just don't consider it a job. I consider it a ministry.
And now it's developing into a ministry
sure
through
is.
This speaking.
You have to know also that she has three teenage boys and a husband. And periodically, who are incredibly supportive. I mean, not only does her husband come over and repair things around the house, but her oldest son will bring over his girlfriends for Charlie to check out and share. Yeah.
It's obvious that a lot of people love you all.
You have children as well, and we haven't talked about how they have coped with all of this. How have they handled it?
Well, it's been very interesting. I should start with our youngest, our son, because he was totally devoted to his father, so much so that he wouldn't go out and play with his friends. He would bring them to our house and make them feel comfortable around his father. And, pardon me? Oh, and watch cartoons. Dad was very cooperative about that. But our son has been the one, we did mention earlier, that he was really the first one that started to talk about knowing the Lord with his father. He was very strong. And many times he would help me play nurse. Before we had nurses, there were many, many years before we had anyone helping. And he would help me stay up all night taking care of his dad. One night in particular, I had been up taking care of his dad. I had been sick, so he said, I'll take care of Dad. I came out to relieve him so he could sleep before he went to school in the morning, and I promptly fainted because of the bronchitis that I had. He covered me up on the floor and continued for 13 hours straight standing by the side of the bed with his dad without a complaint. And now he was able to secure a football scholarship to Cal Berkeley.
Oh, that's worse. Michigan State, I can take.
Go Bears! And he has gone to several speaking places with us, and he has a very strong Christian belief. Our daughter, who is now at San Francisco State, a music career, she is in the listening stages. And she has been, she had a very hard time. She was just becoming a teenager when her father became very unlike other fathers. It was very hard for her because her family all of a sudden wasn't normal family. And she had been involved in dance and singing and a million things that all had to come to a halt because of expenses. So it was a harder time, I think, on our daughter.
Let's talk about the financial side, Lucy, this has been rather difficult for you. What does it cost per year for Charlie's medical care now?
He's an expensive boy. it's upwards of $75,000 a year.
And that's now, when you're not in the midst of a big medical crisis.
Well, we do have insurance if he's in the hospital.
I see.
And in fact, there were several times when it became so difficult financially that I told him that maybe I should just break his leg and put him in the hospital.
Somebody told me that at one point you became so frustrated with the bills you couldn't pay that you just swept your hand across the desk and knocked them on the floor, that there was a time of great intensity. How have you gotten through that? How are you doing now?
Well, I have a story about that. About 2 o'clock one morning, the bills had piled up so high, everything had been accumulating and piling up, and in great frustration that we sometimes allow to happen, I just said, and I swept them entirely on the floor, and I said, okay, God, it's your turn. The amazing thing was, and I really didn't share with Charlie how desperate the situation was, the amazing thing was that the next day in the mail came a check, totally out of the blue, money that we never thought we would see, the exact amount of the minimum due on every single bill.
The Lord was standing right there.
I took that into Charlie, and I just started to cry. I said, can you believe it? I mean, it was astounding. It was just astounding. And you know the Lord just, he's always there. We just forget that we should always lean on him.
Charlie, had you been praying about that?
Absolutely. Every day.
So you were worried about the finances, too?
Very. I just didn't want him to worry too much. That's why I didn't really want to share.
Yeah.
But we know now that no matter what happens, the Lord's there.
Wasn't there an NFL alumni banquet that was held for you?
Yes. In fact, he almost died that week. It was quite a traumatic week. The NFL Alumni Association had planned a banquet for Charlie in January of 1985. And they raised $60,000 from all kinds of people that came to this banquet. It was phenomenal tribute. And Charlie said it was such an honor to be in the same room with so many famous football players, and Coach Bill Walsh from the 49ers, who were Super Bowl champs that year, took the time to be there. And it was a great sharing, a great gathering of a lot of wonderful people. And Charlie wants me to share also about our nurse. Our insurance is now covering one shift
You require three.
We require three, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They are paying for one, and they pay Florence Nightingale over here, our nurse Linda. And what she does to allow us to keep going is she turns every penny that she has paid back to the trust account so we can pay for other nurses.
You really do that, Linda? You work without any fee?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Why?
Again, I guess I just consider it a ministry, and my husband and I talked about it for a long time, a year ago when the insurance was going to take this up, and we had to agree together, and we did, that it was so difficult to be able to afford to pay the nurses that we felt like that would be something that we could do to make it easier. And so we agreed to do that. And it's also, maybe there's a little bit of selfishness to it, because if we don't have money to pay the other nurses, they won't come to work. And so it makes it a little bit easier for me, because then we're able to pay the other girls to keep them there.
Are there great financial needs at this time? I'm not sure these folks would be honest with me. That's why I ask you, Linda.
Yes, it's a lot better now, though, that Kaiser has taken on 8 hours a day of nursing care. So it's much, much easier than it was, but it's very, you know, it's not easy. Probably the hardest thing now is finding nurses that can work and that are willing. We hire nurses' aides to work for us because it's cheaper, and it's really, really hard to find people who are committed and dedicated and willing to do this kind of work.
Charlie, does the Lord know about that?
Absolutely.
Does he have you in his hands? Has he lost track of you? Is there anything that's taken place in your life that's escaped his vision and his care?
Not a thing. Not at all. I remember when I first learned the scripture verse, 1 Peter 5:7, casting all your care on him because he cares for you. That really helped Charlie a lot.
Charlie, traveling and speaking three times a week keeps you busy, but because of your condition, certainly there must be a lot of quiet time in your life. How do you spend that? What is important to you? Is there not a lot of it? Lucy's saying there's not a lot of quiet time.
No quiet time.
It just would seem that you might have more quiet time than someone else, perhaps.
You would think so. But I don't think so. First of all, when they're home, Charlie's front door is a revolving door. They have company at their house constantly. Sometimes people line up all former football players, former cheerleaders, former students, people from the town, people who have heard his story and are passing through town, call on the phone and say, can I just spend a few words? People bring their friends over. We had a lady the other day who brought over a friend of hers who was dying of cancer. And you know, Charlie was able to encourage her. There are constantly people. Charlie's saying, I usually go to sleep about 1 or 2 in the morning, and I love to spend that time with praise tapes or Bible study. Charlie's involved in 2 Bible studies, so it takes us a lot of hours a week getting all those questions answered. Bible study fellowship is pretty demanding, and
he won't go without having every one.
Right.
So it takes a long time looking up all the scriptures and turning and him figuring out exactly what he wants to say, and then we write down exactly what his answer is. So
what an inspiration. You see why I love these stories?
Yes. Well, I was thinking about the last few weeks that we've had here and how the pressure of all of the responsibilities have kind of caved in on us, and you can get a little depressed and a little down and feel like the Lord's not watching out for you like he ought to, and you can feel badly for yourself.
And
but when
you run
see,
into folks
oh,
like this.
Oh, my goodness.
In fact, Lucy, if we had a television camera here, people would see that you're wearing a collar. And that doesn't mean a collar on your sweater. It means that you have some neck problems. Did you not want me to say that? You flinched when I said that.
Lucy will never say what it is, but she took care of Charlie for many years before she had nurses. And all of the lifting and moving of Charlie, she has degenerated discs all up and down her neck and her back. Mm. And is in pain 24 hours a day. And she would never say that, but see, I can say it.
Lucy, you're some kind of strong lady. Do you feel that way? Or are you just taking it one day at a time?
One day at a time. It's so exciting for me to see Charlie be so willing to go out and talk to so many people and encourage so many people. That, you know, is just such an answer to dreams.
Charlie, how'd you get a lady like this? How'd that come about? The Lord give her to you?
He says, I was just going to say that the Lord dropped her on the steps by the bookstore when we were in high school. And it was love at first sight.
In a world where people are scratching and clawing each other half to death over minor little irritants and conflicts and things that really shouldn't even be given the time of day, it is sure refreshing to see people like the two of you, who obviously love each other so much. You going to go the distance, Lucy?
No, Charlie's going to outlive me. He keeps me going. I mean, I cannot complain. You know, he's willing to go through the pain, the frustration of all of us having to get him ready and out the door. And we invariably run into a multitude of brick walls all the time. And that's where his humor is just wonderful. Linda's going to share about Charlie's fortune cookie that he has taped to the wall.
Right. There's so much that transpires between the three of these guys. While she's talking, they're reading each other's lips, and she knows what Linda's going to say next.
We were in a Chinese restaurant not too long ago, and Charlie's fortune was so great, we have it taped on his wall in his room, and it says, the greatest pleasure in life is doing the things that people say you cannot do.
That is your motto. Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you all being with us. You inspire me. Your faith, especially. Without that faith, you'd never make it, obviously.
Charlie wants to say, it's been an incredible privilege to be here. We've admired you for years and years and years and never thought we'd be able to come and meet you. And we just want to thank you, and we appreciate this more than you do.
Charlie, I know you're not unfamiliar with huge amounts of fan mail, but you're going to get some more from these programs. You want to see it?
We would more than welcome to hear from anyone. And if we can help in any way, we will.
Do stay in touch with us, will you?
Oh, absolutely.
When you're on your magnificent speaking career, buzzing down the freeway and coming by, Focus on the Family. You do.
Now that we know
drop
how to
in
get
and
here.
See us. You got lost today, didn't
yes.
you? Okay. Well, Lord bless you all. And again, I know that He will.
Thank you. Thank you.
And with that, we come to the end of this Focus on the Family cassette. If what you've heard has been an encouragement to you or someone you know, please write and let us know about it. We'd appreciate hearing any questions or comments that you may have. We prepared a booklet entitled Surviving the Crises of Life, which tells some of the different problems that can happen in life and suggests ways to deal with crisis situations when they arise. This pocket-sized publication is yours free of charge when you write to us and request it. Also, for those of you who don't already receive our monthly Focus on the Family magazine, 16 full-color pages of interesting articles on issues that impact the family, the upcoming broadcast schedule, and print and audio resources for the home, you can write to us and request a free subscription. We'd be happy to send you a copy of the booklet, the magazine, or both when you write to us at Focus on the Family, Pomona, California, 91799. Or if you'd like immediate information on these resources, you can call our toll-free number. It's 1-800 and the letters A Family. Someone will be there to take your call Monday through Friday during normal business hours. Thank you for listening.